I know
Love
this is a
Talk
business.
Radio.
Welcome to Women of Wisdom, everyone. I know this is a bit of a surprise to hear me on a Wednesday morning, but I land up doing this podcast on Wednesdays now, in addition to Tuesdays and Mondays, because I have to fit everything in. And I am blessed enough to have Papayas on the other line, and she's going to talk about her story. And so I'm blessed and honored enough to have her on the other line. Papayas, can you hear me? Radio seems to be acting up. I don't know what's wrong. I think.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah. God. That's okay. Blog Talk Radio didn't act up. So that leads me to my first question. Why did you want to start this business?
So working with Time Freedom, it really started, I guess it was more of a journey, but I've studied teams for years. I've worked as a consultant, and it really came about through this process of, I've always wanted to start my own business, but it really came about through my own experience of really working hard. So I started when I was young. I come from an immigrant family, so we were working since the age of 7 in some ways. And at the time, you know, we used to joke and we used to say child labor, and you know, we're helping our parents clean their office and, you know, doing these sort of accounting reports and all these kinds of things. And so I was really trained, you know, you work hard, you get results. And I watched my parents, and they worked hard and they got results. And then through my experience, I went to school, worked as a consultant. What I found, I went through these phases where I'd work really, really, really hard. And 2-3 years, things would start to accelerate, and then I'd just get sick and I'd crash. And then I'd start the cycle all over again. So through my experience going to school and working and really taking on the ideas of others about working really hard to be successful and actually recognizing that that's not working for me, because I only end up being sort of successful for 3 years before I have to hit restart and start all over again.
Yeah.
And so it, you know, led to this place where I started to find balance, and I also started to see results, and then I started helping clients do this, and I kind of discovered they were getting results as well. So it evolved through working with teams, and then as I started working with my clients on leadership and lifestyle and adding that to the team element, it became this whole piece around time freedom.
And so is time freedom a new concept, or is it the old concept, you're just giving it a new twist?
I think of time freedom, so I don't know if it's a new concept or an old concept. I'd say that the idea has definitely been around for a while, but I think about time freedom as an emotional freedom and more of a feeling and a sense of control over the way we choose to use our time and live our lives. So for some people, working long hours, that can actually work for them. For some people, that doesn't work for them. So it's really about finding a sense of freedom with the way you use your time and not having to follow a rigid formula. So the way I work with people, you know, you'll see a lot of consultants, you know, here's a schedule, here's a routine, follow it, and, you know, you do this and your life will be perfect. And then you talk to people and they're like, yeah, I've got the routine. I've never actually gotten past the first thing. You know, I might wake up in the morning and drink a glass of water and that's my level of success. So
yeah.
I started developing.
Yeah.
Right? We've all got that routine. We've got stuff in our calendar. We don't follow it.
No, but I like to joke that if I didn't have my iPhone, I would be lost, because I have a disability. For those of you who do not know, who are new listeners to my podcast, I have a disability. I also have a traumatic brain injury on top of that physical disability. My physical disability is cerebral palsy. And what attracted me to Papyrus is that her philosophy of freedom of time management, because I always joke that if I didn't have my iPhone, I would be lost. If I don't write every thing down to a T, that I'm lost. And I like to know when I'm, what I'm doing when. And so people joke with me. They're like, when you're so organized, I'm like, well, that's the way I am. So when that leads me to this next organizational psychology, I'm noticing on my little cheat sheet here that you have a PhD in organizational psychology.
Yes, I do, and it's essentially a science. It's a science based on statistics more than theory. But what we do as organizational psychologists is we take a lot of psychological theory and we develop surveys and we test them in the workplace to see if we get results. So it can be related to leadership, it can be related to motivation, time management, teams, virtual teams, organizational commitment. So we really work with people and we develop experiments using large groups of people to really understand, does this doing this one thing lead to this result? So it's really an understanding of how the psychology of humans leads to improved performance and improved results and better efficiency.
How cool is that? How cool is that? Because what I'm realizing, I also teach too. I teach able-bodied preschoolers twice a week in the mornings, Mondays and Tuesdays. And people say, you have the patience of a saint. And what I'm noticing is that, how do I put this nicely? We have these kids so structured that we don't let them be themselves. We do this, we do this, we do this with the kids, and we don't let them be themselves. And I'm noticing that teachers are not willing to think out of the box unless they have a disability, like myself, or they have the disabled training to work with the learning diagnosis or learning diagnosed child, or they just love working with the disabilities realm. Other than that, they don't perceive disabilities like they should. And so everyone looks at me like I'm nuts. So that leads me to my next question. How do we quit controlling these kids like we're robots, like they're robots, and giving them the respect they need and giving them everything else they need along with boundaries?
Wow, this is a bit of a soapbox for me because I used to actually do autism therapy and I've seen this transition to the school system.
Oh boy. Well, let's get into that. Let's delve right into that. That's my now people know my secret. Why I secured you on my show is because I figured this would be the perfect aspect to start a Wednesday morning. And, so let's delve right into it.
I am really going to put this in a simple way. It's my soapbox, but it's also the answer is simple. So where I think it comes from is when you have teachers in the education system, they've gone through the education system, right? So they've done their kindergarten through grade 12. So 12 years of this is boom, 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 boom. We're not going to get creative. You're going to read a book. You're going to answer questions. You're not really going to think. You're going to memorize and, like, regurgitate.
Yeah.
Then they go into higher education, and it's just more of the same idea, right? Listen, regurgitate,
yeah.
structure. And somewhere in that, and the speed of the amount of content that they're given, what I've noticed is there's no time to actually learn. There's no time to understand. And so it goes to this very simple thing, seek to understand. We're always saying, understand me. And it's like, take a minute, put yourself in that person's shoes, and try to understand how they are thinking about and interpreting this situation.
Yeah.
And then work from there. So I can give you a really, it's kind of a cute, silly story, but we, one of the kids I work with, we put him, you know, into school, and, you know, his teacher was saying, well, he's got behavioral issues. Like, we can't get him to sit still. First of all, we have a child with autism. He's, you know, 5 years old. So a 5 year old who can't sit still is pretty normal.
Yes. Yeah.
So first of all,
5 year old. Spoiled, who can't sit still, is pretty normal.
Pretty normal. So
yep.
She was saying, you know, he sits there and he'll sit in the first story time circle and he gets up and he runs to one of, you know, the Play-Doh station and she says, I follow him. And then he goes to the next station and he starts running around the classroom and he's just very disruptive. And we said, is he looking at you when he does that? And we said, who's controlling who? Because what he's doing when he's looking at you, he's trying to find out if you're going to follow him and chase him, and he's initiating a game of tag, and you're falling for it.
Yes. Yes. Hello.
Because she never tried to get in his head.
Yeah, because these kids are smarter than we think. I mean, I'll tell you a funny story that happened yesterday. Now that we're talking about not giving these kids educational freedom, my colleague goes, okay, we're going to sing a song. Do you know one of the kids knew exactly what song we were going to sing? And she goes, my song, and it was London Bridge is Falling Down. And without the blue, she goes, my song. And this is an able-bodied preschooler who automatically knew it was London Bridge is Falling Down. And so that is the creative freedom I like to see. And that is why I'm eventually going to get my 4-year degree, eventually going to get my doctorate in special ed, because my biggest wish, and that leads me to my next question, is that we mainstream every single child in the disabled classroom. I don't care if I have to bring able-bodied kids to the disabled classroom, but how are we supposed to accept these kids for who they are? Because 9 times out of 10, when I say to my colleague, I'm going to do research on something, she looks at me like, you're crazy. And although she says information is always helpful. So from your vantage point and time freedom, how are we supposed to do this?
So do this specifically, what are we trying to do?
Give people do this as I say, give people the creative freedom they need to think out of the box, including those kids.
So I think I don't know if it's something that we give through choice and then it's something we just take. So we accept the creative freedom and somebody somewhere always has to take a risk and just do the work in spite of everybody, all the naysayers, all the people who say it won't work. And it always starts with someone just doing it, and then you get the results.
Yeah.
It's not, we wait for, a lot of times we're waiting for permission. Am I allowed? Will you give me? No, just do it. You might have to work longer hours. You might have to get creative in terms of how you use your time. But if this is a passion, that's where time freedom comes in, is making that choice that this is something that I'm passionate about, and I'm going to put my time into this because I think it's important for the world to see the results.
And my heart and soul, I mean, I started Women of Wisdom after publishing my book, I Win, which can be found on Amazon. In 2012, I published that in October of 2012, and people ask me all the time, how do you run a company? How do you do all this with a physical disability? I said, well, I need to speak on this subject, so I'm going to create a project and put my heart and soul into it. It's mind over matter, and I just got a Facebook message saying that from a colleague saying that she doesn't want me to be stressed out before I leave next week to go motivational speak. But I think if people put their heart and soul into something, the results are going to be worth it. And that leads me to my next question. How would you say it's time to quit listening to the naysayers and put your heart and soul into something?
When the voice gets very loud, some people can act when that voice is quiet, but when you're supposed to act on something, you know, you that voice does not shut up, and there will be a pull and there's a push. So you'll see that if you continue on the path you're currently on, it gets more and more and more painful, and that pull towards following your dream and your passion, it just gets more and more powerful. So you're either going to listen or you're going to wait until something absolutely falls apart in your life. So if you hear, you hear so many people in the coaching and development and training community, you hear their stories and they say, you know, I hit rock bottom and then I made a change. Well, they could have made that change a lot sooner, but they had to wait for the bottom to fall out, for that, like, that voice to get loud enough for them to start taking action. And I was actually just listening to a talk by David Neagle the other day, and he was talking about how our subconscious mind, the goal of the subconscious mind is to really keep us safe. And when you think about that idea of staying safe, when the bottom drops out, living the life you've been currently living, we're no longer safe anymore. So the subconscious goes, okay, I can make a change.
We can make a choice
before it gets so bad. Pardon me?
We're no longer safe anymore once we've hit rock bottom. I mean, we're no longer safe in our the way we think.
Exactly. So that's, you know, that triggers that change. So we can do it early, and if we don't, the bottom will eventually drop out until you're no longer safe living the way you are, and you will be forced to change.
Yeah. And how do you feel about all these standardized tests they're giving kids nowadays? I mean,
I look at it as that too. There's some of it is motivation, right? So it's sort of supports the system, right? It's an easy way of measurement, but it doesn't look at the creative element.
No.
And
no.
Part of the reason it doesn't look at the creative element, it's hard to measure. It's hard to create consistency around creativity, what we see as creative, how we discover creativity. So a lot of the ways things are done right now, they're done that way because they're easy to measure. And if
they're
we
done
find new creative ways of measuring things, the system will change.
Yep. And they would quit kicking good, high-quality teachers who have the passion out the door. But right now, it's like people are getting kicked out left, right, and center because teachers, I've quickly discovered in my own field too, that we don't have the support we need. And I think if we did and had that creative freedom to deal with these kids as unique individuals, I think the system would be a lot better.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think technology really supports that. There is a, now I wish I could remember where the school system is, but there is a principal in a school, and what he does is he's put all the lessons online. So the kids go home, they go through the lesson, and then they come to the classroom to ask questions and learn. Rather than being in the classroom and the system is, you know, I'm going to read you the book and we're going to go through the chalkboard and we're going to go through the notes in order. They do that before they come
love
into
it.
The classroom, and then
love
they get
it.
To use the teacher to learn. Yeah.
Love it, love it, love it. High blend teaching. Love it. Thank you very much.
Yes.
And please don't say that to California. Yeah, because, I mean, technology is so integrated in our lives now, it's not even funny. And so what would you say to people that use technology on a daily basis and think, oh, this technology is so intrusive that I can't stand it anymore?
Okay, this may not be politically correct, but I think a lot of people who struggle with technology are just not willing to learn, and they're struggling to go through the change. So if they're willing to learn and ask for help and get a teacher and do a little practice, they'll get a lot more value out of technology. And there's a bad idea of, you know, face-to-face, in-person contact. I think there's a lot of value in that. I don't want to take that away. But technology provides us the ability to stay in touch with people and connect to people who aren't in the same space. So
yeah,
it allows us to broaden our horizons. And you've probably seen these online. There's online communities where people can find others like themselves that they can connect with that they never find in their real world. So they really have an opportunity to express themselves. So I believe technology allows us to connect. It allows us to have different modalities of learning. And I've heard somewhere that early 2016, we're going to get into 3D video, et cetera. So we'll be able to use technology in different ways. And can you imagine the creativity, you know, working with disabilities, the ability to sort of interact with technology in different ways and create learning opportunities. I mean, I'm just going to go back to an autism example. One of the kids I was working with, he liked sparkly things. So we found an online program where he looked up letters, and we didn't really know what was going on. You know, we're just like, oh, yeah, he's kind of like words, and he can play with it, and he gets it right, and he gets to see the sparkly thing. He loves the sparkly thing, right?
Yeah.
And so it was sort of this opportunity for him to do some kind of learning. And we're not really sure. We think he taught himself to read. We can't figure out who taught him, but we just sort of paid attention. We tried to understand what he liked, and it was like, he wants to see the sparkly thing at the end. Let's find a bunch of stuff with sparkly things at the end.
Yes!
And that was enough motivation.
Geo told this kid, I'm laughing because so many people geo towards kids, let alone adults with disabilities, and you'll get a lot more results if you geo towards the kids / main the kids, i.e. Peer support is the best teacher I've found.
what was the name of the teacher?
Peer support, meaning that the kids are integrated with their peers. I mean, sticking kids in the classroom with other disabilities doesn't help when they're disabled themselves. They'll just pick up bad habits, and it's like coaching because you're trying to teach them how to act in a appropriate manner. And so that being said, it's hard enough to teach these kids. And so I swear, if you geo towards the kids, you get better results. Do you agree with that statement?
That if the learning environment is geared towards the children, you get better results?
If the learning environment has able-bodied peers in it, you get better results out of the disabled child.
Yes, it's sort of, you know, it's, we don't even need to put this in the context of disability, but for anybody, if you raise the standard of the peer group, the individual will raise their personal standards.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
That's not just disabled. That's absolutely everybody.
That's absolutely everyone. That's absolutely
yes.
everyone. And we leave it at that because I'm looking at my clock. But I'm going to let you tell everyone where they can find you.
Sure. So before I even say where you can find me, I know we talked about different things that are they're tangentially related, but what I really do is I work on time freedom. So that has sort of three elements. The first element is self-mastery. So mastering ourselves, our emotions, the way we use time, our distractions, really mastering, you know, those thoughts in our head. So, you know, you and I talked a little bit about that. You know, there's this sort of thought that comes up, and how do we know we should make that change? You get that thought, and it keeps reoccurring and reoccurring. Do something about it. Act on it. So it's really about mastering ourselves and our environment and our emotions and our minds. The second part of time mastery is literally mastering how we use time. Do we chunk it? Do we create routines? Do we set timelines for us? Really creating a unique, customized approach. So for you, you were saying, you know, you can't live without your iPhone. Others, you know, they're like, you schedule me, I'm not doing anything that day because I don't do schedules, right? So really, really understanding ourselves and developing a deep understanding and using time in a way that supports us, not that drags us down and, you know, forces us to get really rigid, but really supports us. And whatever that looks like is whatever that looks like. And then finally, it's really about knowing what we're trying to create with this time, right? What kind of life do we want? What kind of business do we want? And really staying conscious about that. So I really work with people to develop self-mastery, time mastery, and really using that to help them focus and achieve their mission, their purpose, their goals, using different techniques. So that's what I do. And I can be found at vfcoaching.net. That's VF for virtual freedom. So it's vfcoaching.net. And I have a Facebook group called Time Mastery for Entrepreneurs. So you can find me at facebook.com/group/Time Mastery for Entrepreneurs.
Well, that's terrific. And it's been a wonderful episode. And for all you, all the guys that are new out there listening to this podcast on a bright and beautiful Wednesday morning, we can also be found at iTunes. You can find my podcast on iTunes. You can subscribe to Women of Wisdom at iTunes. And then you can also find me on Facebook. I'm all over the place. And so I would like end this episode, but it's been a wonderful episode.
Are you still there?
Yeah.
I wanted to say what you're doing in the world is amazing, and you're an absolute inspiration. And I love that you've written a book, you're working with children, you do so much, and you're such an inspiration. And I really love connecting with you. I just think what you do
Thank
is amazing.
Thank you.